and welcome to The World is Our Cloister, another episode of the monthly podcast of the Irish Dominican Friars, where we let you glimpse some of our life here in the cloister as friars, and we also take a look at the world through a Dominican lens. So today's episode, we are interviewing or talking with our three newly professed Dominican friars, Brother David O'Donnell, Brother John Melvin, Brother Aidan O'Connor. Brothers, welcome to the podcast and thank you for being here. Maybe you'll say a little bit about yourselves. Brother David, you'll start off because you're old. I mean the oldest.
Sorry. So I don't want to start off the podcast by boasting, but I'm actually from Cork.
Oh dear.
And I belong to a family of five. I was blessed to grow up in a loving family of both my parents, an older sister and my younger brother. And because I grew up in that milieu, I suppose I was always felt that I was called to marriage, but only in recent times then I discovered the vocation to the Dominican
Great.
Order.
Thank God. Brother John is next, I think, on the hierarchy.
Yes, yeah. And I don't want to brag again, but I am from Donegal, which
right.
is even better
oh dear.
Than Cork.
This is not off to a good start.
But yes, so from Donegal, I am 23. I studied aeronautical engineering before joining the order, so things are quite different now, and it's, you know, safe to say that my experience as an engineer hasn't been very useful so far.
But so far, know, although yeah. what Brother John doesn't realize is that we actually accepted him into the order so that he could start the Dominican space program.
Yes,
and,
mass on Mars.
We're aiming for the moon, I think, 2026. So really, Brother John, you need to get on it. Brother Aidan, how's
Last
life?
Is often in the hierarchy, but that is because of age.
The last shall be first.
I'm also the humblest. I'm the most humble. I'm 20, and I'm originally from Tip.
Ah.
And yes, so I entered when I was 19, so not long after my leaving cert, but I worked in a Catholic coffee shop in Cork immediately the year before I entered.
Yeah, remind us of the name of that coffee shop.
Brew 132.
Brew 132. This is not a shameless plug, but the Dominican Friars are heavily involved in the,
it's pretty
the
great.
Running
yeah,
of
it's
that.
Pretty great.
Beautiful coffee, beautiful tradition, beautiful religion. So you're from Tip, which is short for Tipperary.
Tipperary,
for
yes,
those,
I should have.
Kind of customers of ours, listeners of ours who will not be familiar with that. I probably would have been one of them because I am from the north. But we thought we'd do an episode, brothers, on the newly professed. You are the most kind of the freshest out of the system, so to speak. You've moved up here only a few months ago, up to St. Saviour's in Dublin. And we really just wanted to have a chat with you as to how you've found life so far. If anyone wants to start off, like, what has changed for you so far in your life as Dominican professed friars?
I think what's immediately changed is the structure of our day.
Mm.
You know, in novitiate, you by design have a lot of time for spiritual reading and prayer. And not that you don't have time for that here,
yeah.
but there's study.
Now you used the word there, novitiate. What is that? I did it like so many years ago that I have actually forgotten. So someone needs to remind me as to what a novitiate is.
So novitiate is a year, or is it a year anyway, of really testing your vocation in the order. Yeah, just a year of, I suppose, trial. But you know, trial can seem like a bad thing, but trial is a good thing. Where yeah. you see if the order suits you, the order see if you're suited to our way of life.
Yeah. There's a lovely line, isn't there, whenever you're being received into the order, where the provincial says, you will look at us and we will look at you. So there's kind of a nice dual looking going on there, so that you're testing your vocation, but the order is also testing your vocation, you know. It's one of the reassuring things I've always found about religious life in general, is that you're not discerning on your own, you know, you're not testing the life on your own. You've actually got a community of experienced friars around you who are looking at you and saying, yeah, that guy's suited. Or alternatively, I think not. And we think you're actually suited to something else in the world, you know.
Yeah.
Brother David, how has things changed for you since you've come up from the novitiate, which again is the first year of any religious life?
I suppose once you've taken the vows, there is a certain level of reality that penetrates deeper into your being because you're called to live it out on a more responsible level, the novitiate is gearing up towards taking those vows. Mm. But then once you've actually professed that, the gravity of those vows hits you.
Yeah.
And you realize your own inadequacy. But again, on the day of profession, the provincial asks us, what do we seek? And we're seeking God's mercy and the orders.
Mm.
And that very much is the spirit of the vows, that you're recognizing, I suppose, in poorness of spirit, our inadequacy and our need for God's help.
Mm.
So then you're trying to constantly go back to that initial fervor and trying to go back to that initial call, and then to use St. Dominic as our model of that deeply contemplative, intense, yeah, man of charity.
And seeking God's mercy. Brother John, have you found it?
You know, it's funny because we're speaking about the novitiate, and you know, now as a simply professed brother, in the midst of our studies, the sort of novitiate takes on a kind of nostalgic reverie quality, you know.
Wow.
We're thinking back to, you know, all that free time, you know, where we could
I've never heard it described in that fashion. Nostalgic reverie. What a name for this episode, actually. Nostalgic reverie.
You know, so where you finally understand, you know, the amount of sort of luxury that you had as a novice, you know, where your time was very protected, you know, by the novice master. You had time given over to your own personal reading, prayer, study.
Necessarily.
Whereas here now it's kind of like the more obligatory nature of the study takes hold, you know,
where
you've
got
sort of exams coming up and, you know, the pressure's on.
Yeah, you do kind of have that hanging over you as students, like, necessarily. And I suppose study is a very important part of our life as Dominicans, but, you know, one of the best things I found about the novitiate, again, remembering back 400 years ago when I actually was there, was there was no pressure. You know, there was no pressure for studies. There was no, you had like little assignments to do now and again for the novice master. But like, by and large, there was nobody, you know, standing over you and making sure you know, read this now and then you're going to be tested on it in like 2 weeks' time. It was just, it was quite blissful, you know. I describe it as a kind of a nostalgic reverie, really. Anybody, yeah, Brother Aidan, you're chomping at the bit there to get in and tell me about your novitiate.
Well, I was going to say more about the study side of the novitiate, which is kind of continued now. it's all the same. Is that, I suppose I'd had a love of learning generally, kind of growing up in school, but especially in novitiate, kind of the kind of the freedom of learning for the sake of learning.
Yeah.
And just that wider contemplative space in novitiate.
Mm.
This kind of sense of wasting time with God in a way, you know?
Yeah.
You didn't need to rush through a book. And that continues now, right? I mean, we've still, you know, we have to do essays and modules and such like that. But there's a sense that it's not utilitarian, right? You know, I'm not just pumping something out of it. I'm not there to get a degree. I'm not just there to, you know, get ordained and get out of here, kind of a thing. There's,
I hope not,
a sense of learning. Yes.
I was terrible in university for just wiring through the exam papers, you know, and just kind of learning the formula. But there are no exam papers in the novitiate.
There are plenty of books as to how to be a novice, but I was like that as well. I wonder, Brother David and I have similar medical backgrounds, and I used to practice like constantly with, you know, and you say like we had multiple choice question exams quite regularly, and that was handy because you could practice them online and whatever beforehand. There's no practice for taking your vows, is there? Like, there's no, I mean, the whole novitiate is a preparation, but there's nowhere you can go online and like do a practice test. You actually don't know, do you, how you'll fare as a vowed religious until you actually live the life.
Yeah, very much so. And I think that when it comes down to how much we place our trust in God, because ultimately, like any vocation in marriage as well, you're saying yes to the uncertain future. And in religious life, you really don't know, especially our primal vow being that of obedience. We don't know where we will be assigned to in years to come. So there has to be a huge element of trust. But then through that trust, you really learn to lean on the Lord. And you're also supported by the brothers, and you grow in that fraternity. Mm. And you see the lives that they've lived out over the years. I think that carries you along. So while it is very much depending on that day-to-day grace, the Lord has given us so many bolsters of support there along the way as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So when I'm talking about like preparation and like actually living the life of the vows, that the day that begins, right, is the day of first profession. And rather beautifully, in the Irish Dominican province, that is almost exclusively on the 15th of September, okay, the Feast of Our Lady of Sorrows, which I think is quite fitting because there are plenty of sorrows ahead for all of you. No, because, well, we, as Dominicans, we have a particular Marian vocation, but I want to ask you now about the actual day itself. So the whole of your novitiate is kind of building up to this day in the future somewhere. The day of first profession, Our Lady of Sorrows, 15th of September. From the day you enter, it's mentioned in the liturgy. You get a year, a canonical year, a year and one day to make your novitiate. So how was the day itself when it finally came around?
Yeah, I mean, the day was very enjoyable. I mean, the one thing I remember especially about it is that it was much easier than receiving the habit, you know. Receiving the habit, you know, it's very
stuck
mysterious.
Stuck on your head and stuff.
You know?
And like, yeah, it's actually...
And, you know, the sort of the liturgy for the habit reception is very theatrical, you know, it's dramatic. Well. You're dressed in the habit. And it's almost engineered to make mammies and grannies cry, do you know? So when it comes to making
the World Is Our Cloister podcast does not endorse this official analysis of the Dominican liturgy.
But when it came to the first vows, you know, despite it being more serious, it was actually a lot easier. You know, you knew, but I mean, you just said that we don't exactly know what it's like to be a vowed religious, but you kind of had a good idea coming up to it, and your parents did, you know.
I have an abiding memory, which is rather unfortunate, and I'll give a shout out to Father Maurice Colgan, who is the prior of our Dominican Priory in Cork, which is the novitiate house where the novices live. So, I mean, one of the questions I wanted to ask you was, what jobs did he have you doing on the morning of the first profession? Because I can tell you, the morning of my first profession, we were all sitting around having breakfast, you know, and it was like everybody was like talking in highfalutin language, and it was, oh yes, we're going to be professed religious and be wonderful and moving to Dublin and St. Saviour's and starting studies. And then the next thing, Father Maurice comes in, and you just get that, hi guys, you know, and he's kind of smiling at you in that like almost devious way, or he's just, hi guys, and you just know he has a job for you. So skip forward then 5 minutes later, when we were stripped of our habits and we were carting beds up and down the stairs in the priory because he was renovating the top floor, you know. That is unfortunately one of the, because I thought to myself, I'd be beautifully prepared, it would be wonderful and tranquil and everything else, but it ended up, it was a sweaty mess from carting beds up and down. So I want to know what he had you doing, in all fairness sake.
I think the morning of, to be fair to him, I don't think we were actually entrusted with any major duties,
so
but we had a tougher novitiate than yourself, because Father Morris was in fact our prior. So we had the workload distributed throughout the entire year. I think we filled, was it 3 or 4 skips in the
day.
So-called place? Yeah. So that would have like accounted for 2 or 3 hours manual labour in the morning in the affectionately dubbed place called Gehenna.
Gehenna, which is from the scriptures, which translates as
hell.
Hell, yeah. Oh dear. Yeah, and Brother Aidan, what did you think of the actual day itself when it came around? Like, your family enjoyed it, and it's kind of a big deal, you know. There's a big kind of liturgy that takes place, as John mentioned there. It's specifically designed to make people cry. So, did your family cry? Were they moved?
I believe so. Probably a little less than habit reception. I think, yeah, the comparison is always there in our minds because they're two events, one year after the other, in which, in some way, in both, you're accepted into the other properly in profession.
Yeah.
But I suppose it's a day of great celebration in a sense. You have a lot of the brothers there and probably quite a few of your family and friends. So in a sense, these kind of two families come together and there's a celebration in that. But yes, like John, I suppose it wasn't so much just the lack of unpredictability, because I suppose too, we were moving to Dublin and things were going to change.
Big schmuck.
Yes, yeah. The high center of culture here in Dublin One. But also I suppose it was a lot more comfortable with it, you know? Hmm. I was very happy in receiving the habit, but it was a lot more a sense of what I was doing for God, and you know, my sacrifice was in view. But kind of from the year of novitiate, I'd seen a lot of the fruit of that. I'd seen the beauty of this life. So just that sense as well of more just kind of celebration and ease in it as well, you know.
Yeah, I remember my family came down the night before. I brought a I mean, I didn't willingly bring them. They just came. But there was a whole coterie of aunts and uncles and cousins and everything. It was wonderful. And both my younger brothers were there as well. I remember they came down the night before profession. So it was the 14th of September. And we just had, like, they came to Vespers in the church at 6 p.m. And they were the only people in the church. And of course, we had Vespers. And I came to them afterwards, and my brother said to me, "Right, well, congratulations." And I said, "What?" And he said, "Well, was that not it? No, is that not why we came all the way here?" And I said, "No." Wait. And then, of course, the next day we had the mass. It was a beautiful, bright day. The church was packed. There was loads of music, and there was my brother Matt, like, you know, transfixed in the front row. And then I think, actually, talking about being moved, he genuinely was moved. You know, he's ordinarily quite a stoic character, but he was moved afterwards by the fact that you physically prostrate on the sanctuary floor before you make your vows. You do it before you receive the habit as well. And I think that moment in particular is like the most poignant moment of the whole liturgy, again, designed to make people cry. But that in particular is also quite tough. Recently, like a few months ago, I was ordained a deacon, and we prostrated during the litany of the saints, which is sung before you're actually ordained, and it was 7 minutes long, and we were prostrated in something like 30 degree heat. I genuinely thought I was going to pass out by the time I actually picked myself off the floor, and there was kind of a puddle of sweat in an outline of my face. But thankfully, the litany is not chanted, Brother John, during that time. So how was that whole experience for you?
Yeah, it is very funny because there's actually a video on the Dominicans YouTube channel, the Irish Dominicans.
Like and subscribe, by the way. So that was a handy kind of segue. Shameless plug. Promoting our many media outlets, which our media manager, Patrick Grant, affectionately known as Paddy G, is beavering away to bring to fruition. So like and subscribe, Irish Dominicans YouTube and Irish Dominicans Instagram. So you were saying about Irish Dominicans YouTube there, Brother John. Yeah.
But there's a scene, the scene at the prostration, it is me. And Father Connor was, you know, he was pointing out that instead of putting my forehead on the ground, I put my chin. Oh, you know, and it looks particularly, you know, unusual, you know, as if I'm about to, you know, catch a wave or something like that.
Interesting strategy. My strategy during, the 7 minutes that we were prostrated, my strategy was to alternate the weight between from my forehead to my nose. So at some points, my nose was kind of like pressed off to the side. And then I thought, I wonder, are they going to take the picture at this time? Or maybe I'll put the weight again on my forehead, you know.
Well, in other words, you know, I felt like it was very dramatic, but then from the you know, from the shot, it was kind of, yeah, surfing, catching a wave.
No waves were caught in the making of that newly professed Dominican. So I want to ask as well, brothers, you know, that's all well and good, and you know, thanks be to God, you've come up here as newly professed Dominicans, but what was it about the order? You know, ye being the freshest friars, I suppose, that we have who are professed, what was it about the order that really drew you or really caught your attention? You know, I assume it was something on social media, since we're so that's a joke. Okay, now, what was the actual attraction point for you, Brother David?
Initially, for myself, being in Cork and having been exposed to the Dominican friars there, it was definitely the quality of their preaching and how they seemed to really have meditated on the word themselves, left it penetrate their hearts, and then were able to expound upon it and give insights to the people. And not knowing a whole lot about the order initially, it would have been the Marian aspect as well, the devotion of the rosary. But then the more I came to know the order through the various livings, I discovered the four pillars of the order: prayer, study, community, and the apostolate for the preaching of the salvation of souls. And that all was very attractive. But ultimately, it was the brothers themselves who were living the life, and that there was like this overflow of joy that derived from their lives of prayer and their lives of community. That it just seemed to be sufficient in itself, that they didn't need any added extras, that the houses of formation, the houses of study, that they themselves were producing such joy and deepening one's relationship with Christ.
We mentioned on a previous podcast how when I was coming into the order, it was the humanity of the brothers that really attracted me, because when I came on livings, a bit naively, I kind of thought, gosh, I'm going to be really out of place here, you know, because these guys are all saints. But one of the things Father Connor had said to me before, as I was kind of reading up on the order and thinking about it, he said, get to know some of our saints before you meet some of our sinners, you know? And very, very fittingly then, on the morning, I think, of my habit reception, breakfast before the Mass, we came down to breakfast anyway, and there was Father Connor, and he picked up a cereal box, and it was empty. And he just turned to me and he went, welcome to religious life, you know, as if to say, like, the brothers are not perfect, you know, and they know that fact, but we're okay with the fact that God is working in us, you know, and he hasn't completed that project yet. It's ongoing. And I suppose, like, being, you know, newly professed Dominicans now, community life, one of the pillars you mentioned, Brother David, is very, very important to that, you know. Have you noticed any change coming up in the last few months from the community life in the novitiate or the community life here? Okay to say you haven't, but what does that kind of mean to you as Dominican friars, that aspect of community?
I think in Cork we were particularly blessed, because Aidan at the time of his entering was age 19, and then we had Father Finney on the other side of the spectrum, who initially was 96, he's since 97. And between that, we had a friar in every decade of the generations, 20s, 30s, 40s, the way up. So it was exceptionally balanced, and I think we gleaned an awful lot of wisdom from the older generation and then from the 40s and 50-year-olds, which would typically be the age cohort where maybe a bit of cynicism might kick in, and yet to see them shouldering to the wheel and still alive with their fervour for God. And then the newly professed friars, such as Father Owen, well, he was 7 years professed at the time, but just to
see that's still very young, by the way. I mean, I think I'm now 5 years professed, so I that really was young, baby of the order.
That was a great blessing. And then I suppose what's so impressive about the studium is that you have brothers who've been, as Father Philip used to often say, like arrows hidden in the quiver in formation. And despite doing all that study, they're still back in the studium. So they recognize the importance of giving of their wisdom to the brothers themselves, that it isn't just about preaching outside of the house, which, it's a lovely testament to the value of community life.
Yeah, I think the community here is just slightly bigger as well, which, because also I think partly because of the design of the church, gives it a very monastic feel. Which I think is more necessary in Dublin as well, because it's just busier, the pace of life is quicker. But in here, it allows, because you've quite a strong community, it allows a slow, contemplative pace as well.
Yeah, picking up on some of the things that you've just said now, monastic roots, which the order does have, and you see that in our life of regularity and our habit and everything else, arrows in quivers. So one of the things I really enjoyed reading in my novitiate was something called Cassian's Conferences. So basically John Cassian goes around in very early times in the church's history, in the desert monks, the desert fathers, and he interviews them. And one of the things, this famous story of that he comes across is this famous story of the famous Abba, who tells him that the rest is very important, because the archer who strings his bow too many times in a row, eventually the bow will be of no use, the string will slacken. So we tend to try and strike a balance as Dominicans, you know, which is something I'm thinking of in regards to moderation. So when people see, when they hear about our cloister, when they hear about our lives, sometimes the reaction is, gosh, it's very strict, you know. And Brother John is nodding very sagely, because he wants to tell me that our life is actually quite moderate and balanced.
yeah.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it is in fact very modern, very balanced. I mean, one of the things that again from the novitiate that you mentioned, Brother David, about Father Finian, one of our venerable older friars, we were blessed to have Father Robert Talty, who has since gone to God. God be good to him. And Father Talty was in his 90s, and he very rarely spoke. But one thing I always remember is was sitting alone with him at the table, I think at breakfast, or I was having a particularly luxuriously long breakfast that morning, and I think I was kind of bent over my cornflakes, and I caught him staring at me, you know, like from down the table. He always sat at the head of the table, and I thought, well, that's a bit weird, but I'll carry on. And he just continued to stare until eventually I looked up and met his gaze, and he said to me, are you happy? And I was caught aback, and I said, I think so. Yeah. I mean, I'm still here. And he said to me, very important that you are happy, you know? And I mean, from a man who didn't speak very much, that to me was like a really important lesson that you know, we should be happy in religious life. Doesn't mean we don't have our ups and downs, but ultimately we should be fulfilled.
Yeah, absolutely. I was sidetracked there because I was thinking of Father Finian's wisdom of saying to us that you're looking very well. So. But he could be quite deep as well, and he'd have been a big proponent of virtue lies in the middle. But absolutely, at our monthly meetings with the novice master during the novitiate, the key question really was, are you growing your relationship with Christ? Which would be synonymous with happiness, ultimately. Yeah, right. And that's what the life is all about. If the life is helping you to provide that scaffolding to grow deeper into your relationship with God, then to persevere. And I suppose it's important then to distinguish between happiness and your emotions as well, that like happiness is a profound sense of joy of being in the company of God and knowing that His grace is abiding with us. And I've certainly found that in the life, even though you'd have the struggles with the academia piling on top, because we have classes from Monday to Friday, 9 to 12:30 consistently. So the amount of material that builds up is, yeah, it's pressurizing, but yet we can be happy amidst all that.
Brother Aidan is shaking his head, but Brother John's going to come in here now.
No, I mean, I was going to just add to what David said there, really, about, you know, you are happy, but often you don't really realize it until you're away or whatnot. Like,
oh,
you know,
very particularly, very poignant.
Particularly in the you know, in the novitiate or whatnot, you know, you go home to the bustle of like family life, and you know, perhaps you're sharing a room with somebody and whatnot, and you're like bunching elbows off and what have you, and then you come back to the silence of the cloister or whatnot, and it's gorgeous, and you finally realize, you know,
I'm home.
Yeah, so I'm kind of hoping for that feeling once we come back here, you know, in the midst of all our study. And
yeah, absolutely. I mean I'm only kind of a hop, skip and a jump up the road, but your family have quite the pilgrimage if they want to come and visit you. You know, they've got to come from Donegal, and likewise, if ever you go, you know, you're going back there at some stage in the year to visit them, you have quite a ways to go. But what you're saying is you don't really want to leave, so I mean, exactly. We might just save on the bus journey, the bus fare, and just keep you here, you know. You can maybe zoom them or something at some stage. Brother Ethan, do they have roads in Tipperary yet? Have they are able to get to and from?
Yeah, 4x4s, you know what I mean?
Wonderful. Yeah. Oh, you're no longer riding donkeys. That's a plus.
I'll hold my tongue, brother. I'll hold my tongue.
Okay, no problem. But I suppose it's all about, well, a lot of the things we're touching on there is this kind of growth in virtue, which is very important to Dominicans. It's kind of a specific aspect to our preaching, our ministry in the confessional. I wonder, you know, do I see myself growing in virtue? I think I have become more patient, such that I can refill that coffee pot every single morning without much complaint. You know, I might grumble sometimes, but living with the brothers, you know, and you will experience this now. And again, you bring a kind of a unique perspective, brothers, because you're new into the order. And it's a wee bit like, sometimes I say it's a wee bit like the boiling frog syndrome, you know. I've been in the order now for a good few years. It's become so second nature to me. You're kind of still in that like first fervor, you know. But you do find sometimes that the community are there to knock kind of blocks off you, almost. Are they there to kind of, you know, chip away at you, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I've mentioned this to David before, you know, we're going to bring this up again, you know?
Oh, dear.
I remember
we're not going to mediate between any kind of inter-novitiates.
But I remember it being a point that the way David used to eat his chips, that was nearly the moment that drove me over. No, but I suppose it was just the element of, you know, things were quite close in the sense that, you know, I wasn't traveling around the city and having loads of experiences. That was what I saw that day or whatever, you know. So I suppose there's a variety of things like that. There's things that show you kind of your own pride or whatever, just because I suppose, how would you say that, you react to that. Now, there's some things that are just naturally going to annoy anyone, you know, and that's just kind of a building of virtue there in patience. But I suppose the brothers are also, can be a great example too, you know? I mean, it's not just kind of the negative side. I've definitely learned a lot from some of the brothers, just in Cork even. Just, you'd see them do things selflessly and without any reward or anybody noticing at all. Just like the small things, like, I mean, even putting butter back on the dish selflessly, or...
Wait, sorry, butter goes on a dish?
On a butter dish?
I thought we just, like, pasted on the table.
Oh, yeah, just on the table.
Smeared it in.
Or the brother who makes coffee in the morning, which keeps this priory running.
I mean, just keep this priory running, yeah.
I mean, it's very interesting going from, you know, a community in university to a religious community, you know, because... I remember being in halls and, you know, you're just put in with random people, you know, and you have nothing often, you have nothing often that is binding you together other than the fact that fortune has happened to put you together, you know, whereas in religious life it is, you know, we're here because we love the order, because we love our Lord, you know.
Yeah.
So already you have a bit of an advantage when it comes to seeing things that maybe, you know, perhaps drive you up the wall when the coffee pot isn't filled. You know, you're like, this is my brother, you know?
Namely that I haven't got there in time to fill the coffee pot. But you're touching on something really important there, Brother John, because we are bound together supernaturally, right? And it is by that actual profession. It is by our vows that we are bound, you know? So, but, you know, the Lord doesn't take away those kind of natural differences and tensions. It would be extremely easy if he did, but he doesn't, right? Because he wants to actually make us sense, you know, through that life. So I've always found tremendous support in the brothers. They're there to listen to me. They're there to have the crack. We're there to have discussions and all the rest. But they do, you know, there's that balance then between that aspect, and they're also making me sent, you know, or the, at least the Lord is, through their being annoying. No, through their humanity, because I know that my humanity is also causing them no end of annoyance. No. You know, a process of sanctification, you know. Yeah, but that is very important. I was in a kind of a somewhat Catholic community as well in university, and we tried to have maybe like regular prayer, we tried to have meals together, this kind of thing. It worked to an extent, but whenever it got too hard, you could always just go home, you know. But we have all now made a commitment to God. I suppose that might be a good place to talk about the fact that, you know, your commitment is so far temporary, right? You have all committed on that day of profession for a limited amount of time. Do you think that's wise, or should we do it like the olden days where you just came straight out of novitiate into solemn profession? I think it's not wise that we do that in today's day and age. I think it's like a time of testing is actually quite prudent, you know, such that you know you're testing the life for longer than that period of the novitiate, you know.
Yeah, I certainly agree the time of testing is necessary, but then also you don't want to have the attitude that you are here on a temporary basis, so you live day to day as if this will be your life forever, and you're hoping that the Lord will provide a lot of joy and peace along the way. I think for myself, when I was making those vows, you were aware that it is only binding for 3 years, but you're trying to look at the bigger picture as well, but also surrendering yourself to the instrumentality of the order, and that's the way that the order has it designed. Sure. So there's peace in that.
Absolutely. Thanks be to God. I always felt it was just, it is supernatural, but I felt very at ease. You know, I think that was a great gift from the Lord, like almost from the day I entered the novitiate. I just knew, despite the, like, any kind of turmoil on the surface from the ups and downs of daily life, which you get in all walks of life, I just knew that this was right. You know, and I felt that. I mean, we say we feel it. It wasn't a feeling. It was a knowledge. You know, and it could only have come from God. I knew that coming to make solemn profession a couple of years ago now, that this was just right for me. You know,
I mean, for myself, it was the same. You know, I mean, of course, there's a supernatural element there, but it just made sense.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I think that's just a big part in the sermon itself. Supernatural sense. Oh, yes. I mean, you know, of course, feeling the call to a vocation, if you like, feeling, if feeling is the word, is something that, you know, if you feel an attraction to the order, if you feel a desire for the order, well, it's probably inspired by God. Mm. Or there's a large possibility it is, you know, and that, and that can be tested then by trying that out. But I felt that, I think even the sense that I wanted to live a life like ours, a life of prayer, and study, that in itself is a sign of vocation.
Our current novice master, he was your novice master, Father Philip Morin. He, one of the most important things that has ever been said to me, I suppose, about Dominican life, religious life in general, is that it's not natural to want to live in poverty and in chastity and in obedience. It's not natural. It's supernatural. So, like you said, Brother Aidan, if you have a desire for that, it's probably come from God. You know, there's a fair chance that you should probably go and test that out. Do you know? I just find that was really kind of striking wisdom, and it has stayed with me to this day. And I remember the day and hour that he actually said it to me, because it was a moment in my mind when I thought, yeah, that clicks. I'm going to do this. That really clicks, you know. Brothers, I think it's been wonderful to have you here on The World is Our Cloister. I think at this point we might leave it there. But thank you all for joining us on the podcast. I'm very grateful. And thank you as well to our listeners who have joined us now. This podcast is for now a monthly installment. So please look out for next month's episode, where we look a bit at the life of Scripture in the Dominican Order, both in terms of Lectio and in terms of our study. How does the Bible, as that chief vehicle of revelation, how does that play its kind of central role in our lives? And how could it play a bigger role in the lives of our listeners? So thank you very much once again. Don't forget that there are more resources, more content on our various social media outlets, Irish Dominicans Instagram, Irish Dominican YouTube channels. Thank you again, and God love you.